Welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Watch us live every Sunday morning at 9:30 or 11:05 a.m. at gosblive.com. Or visit us in person. You can find directions at gostonebridge.com. Connect with us on our social media at facebook.com/gostonebridge and our Instagram at sbchurch.
All right. Happy Valentine's Day. So we thought it was a good day to start a new series and to talk about making love last, because especially love is one of those things that it needs to affect our relationships. I mean, that's the whole point of love, and it's the whole point of God's love to us, is how he affected us and how it has brought us into a relationship with him. But I guess one of the struggles that we have is most of us understand that we can fall in love, right? We know what it means to often say, I love this, or I love this person. Or all of a sudden to have some a relationship where you have these expectations and these hopes and these dreams. But we also understand what it means to fall out of love or to have love not be able to continue, or those dreams dashed or falling apart on us. And so the question is, well, how do you make love last? In fact, I put a lot in your outline this morning. It'll pop up on the screen also for you. Love is built, I was reading, an author said this, love is built on trust. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, when you say I love something that you trust it or it trusts you, but if you're talking about a love that lasts, the kind of love that is going to last, it has to be built on trust. Because in the relationship, in the love of the relationship, there are these things that have to take place in order for it to reciprocate, for it to go back and forth, and so that you say, no, it will grow, it will build, it will go through difficult times, but it will not collapse, it will not fall apart on us. In fact, Paul, when he's writing in 1 Corinthians 13, the great love chapter, here's what he says. He says, this is 1 Corinthians chapter 13, beginning with verse number 7. He says this. He says, love never gives up. That's lasting, isn't it? He says, love never loses faith. It doesn't give up. It doesn't give out. He says, love is always hopeful. Love endures through, say this part with me, love endures through what? That's amazing, isn't it? Love endures through every circumstance. And then he goes on to say later in the next verse, love will last forever. In fact, some of the translations say, love never fails. Later in the next chapter, Paul actually writes, pursue love. So he's not just talking about any kind of love when he's saying this. He's talking about a very specific understanding of love, a certain definition of what love is all about. And it's actually in the Bible. The reason Paul talks about it is because this is the kind of love that God came to demonstrate to us, to show us, to get us to buy into and say, no, this is the love that you want. Because this is the kind of love that will last. But let's be honest. We struggle with that. It's difficult for us. We want something like that. But then the question is, how do we continue in it? How do we help it grow? What are the things that we can do that align with the love that God has for us and the love that God tries to teach us? And then at the same time, what are the things that if we do, we actually sort of squash it? We cause it to fall apart. I put in your outline a few things are more destructive to love, and especially the love-trust relationship. Then I thought of two things that I think are really key, and the slow erosion of love. Few things are more destructive to love than this slow erosion. And you say, okay, what do you mean by slow erosion? This is what I mean by slow erosion. Somebody loves someone else, and they do things for someone else, and they care for someone else, and they feel as they do this over time, it's a slow erosion, they feel that the other person doesn't care. The other person doesn't respond. The other person doesn't notice. And over time, if that continues, then what happens to the feelings that the person has is those feelings grow of I'm not appreciated. They don't care at all the fact that I love and the things that I do and the things that I show. And it's pretty common that we could feel that way because, you know, sometimes people do miss it. Sometimes people do fail to express a gratitude or a thankfulness for the things that you do and the things that you contribute and the things that you put in. I mean, I've talked to men before who say, you know, I work and I work and I work and I work and I work to provide for my family. And it just appears that no one cares all the sacrifice and all the work that I put in. Or I've talked to moms before who say, I do so much for my kids and I work and I work and I give to them. And it just feels like no one ever cares or appreciates what I do for my family. You ever feel that way? Sure. And that slow erosion can be absolutely deadly over time to love. It can just take out the life of a relationship of love. And then the second thing is, I call this the mortal wound. And this comes from the other side of the relationship. And the mortal wound is this: the other person does give, they do care, they do have these feelings, but the other person never expresses gratitude, never says thank you, never says, what you do is so important. I so appreciate all that you give and all that you pour into this relationship. And that becomes a mortal wound to the relationship, because again, the person giving and the person doing doesn't ever feel appreciated, because the person that is the recipient never says thank you, never says how much this matters and how much this means. You know, if you're around kids, and you've probably done this with your kids, right? And someone gives your child a gift, or you know, maybe your kids are graduating and they receive graduation gifts, and you do this with your kids. The first thing that you'll see a parent or adult a lot of times do with a kid when they're given something, even before they've really ever taken it, is you'll see them go, "What do you say?" You ever seen that? You ever done that? Sure. What do you say? You say thank you. It's the proper response. It's what you should say to someone who is giving to you, who is thinking about you and has gone out of their way to give something to you. I was like maybe you were when you were growing up. How many people enjoyed writing thank you notes growing up? Anybody really enjoy it? Okay, a few people. I'm glad you're honest. I know you were thinking, if I put my hand up, I'm the only one here. But, you know, there are a few people that do. A lot of it is just work. And my wife did the same thing with my kids that you might do with yours. The same thing that was done with me is during those times of graduation or birthdays or special occasions, we were required to write thank you notes back. Why? Because our parents were trying to teach us how important it was to express gratitude, to say, I am so grateful, I'm so thankful for what you've done. This means so much to me. It is so important in any relationship that gratitude is expressed back to the other person, so the other person doesn't feel like no one cares about what I do. It's not important to them. And so that the love does not get cold water poured on it, and the love doesn't eventually go away and begin to die. When in my younger years, I sang a lot, and I really enjoyed doing it, and I guess I was okay at it because I got an opportunity to sing at some different events and different things. And one of the things that I was taught, because I didn't know how to handle when someone came up to me and told me that they enjoyed the song. You know, they would say, boy, we really like that. That meant so much to me. And I would kind of hee-haw around, and I didn't know exactly what to say. And I would say, oh, it's really not that good and whatever. And finally, the first real mentoring pastor that I had, he took me aside real quick, and he says, let me tell you what you say when someone says something like that. He says, you say, thank you. And I still can see him in my face say, thank you. It's just like my mom, right? It's just like writing a thank you note. You say thank you. And let me tell you why. Because it finishes the expression. They came and said, that really meant a whole lot. They're giving you something, a compliment when you do, and you say thank you, and it completes it. It's finished. You don't say, oh, no, no. And listen, I was around people, and I learned a little bit. If you just say no and you try to act real humble, they keep on getting compliments, right? Say it again. You know, let's just continue it on. But you need to finish the action, complete the end of the expression to say thank you. How many people do you know that put in work and hard work and so much effort into something, and they only did it to, at the end, quit before they finished it? You ever known someone like that? I'm sure you're probably thinking, I've done that. There are times when I just gave up or quit, or for some reason I walked away and I never finished it, and I will always regret that I didn't finish the expression, that I didn't finish the action, that it wasn't completed. That's what gratitude is. You're finishing it. You're taking it to its natural and logical conclusion, and its loving conclusion, that someone cared for you, someone did things for you, someone spoke something to you, and you said thank you. And you know, the truth is, you will never, ever know just how important that is to the other person who gave you the compliment or who did something for you, because for them, it completes it. For them, it helps them understand and realize and connect with the idea that this really mattered. This really counted. You know, if you look at Jesus, it's kind of interesting because in Jesus' life, he gave some commands and he said some things that a lot of times seem strange. At least they seem strange to me, because it seems like these are things that we would No. And in John's record of Jesus' life, John spends a lot of time in the last week of Jesus' life. Jesus is about ready to leave. And one of the things he does, it's recorded in the 13th chapter of John, is Jesus has his disciples together, and he's giving them a lot of final instructions of what, you know, they're supposed to do. And I think he's given a lot of final instructions to how they're supposed to finish some things. And not come short on some things, not leave some things unfinished in life. And this is what it says in verse number 34. It says that Jesus said, "So now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other." Now, you know, I would think that they would say, "Well, we know that. What is new about something like that? Why would you say love is important? Why would you say love counts or love?" Of course we know that love counts and love matters. And most people, you know, in our world would say, "Yeah, we know that. We understand how important that is." You don't have to preach to us or give us some sort of message or emphasis about how important love is. We all get that. We all know that. But then he says this. He says, "Just as I have loved you, you should love each other." So Jesus wasn't talking about love as they had thought it up or imagined it in any way that they imagined. Jesus is speaking very specifically about what love is, and he's not just talking about love that they have dreamed up or heard. He's talking about love that has been demonstrated, that Jesus has lived out before them, that he has shown them. This is what love really is. And so he says in verse 35, he says this, listen to this. He says, "Your love for one another will prove that you are my disciples." Now, what kind of love is proof? Love that is proof is not something that you feel. You can't say the fact that you feel something proves to everyone else that you've been with me or you understand what love is or the kind of love that I've taught you. That wouldn't make any sense, because no one knows what you feel. People only know what you do, sure. They only know how you complete it, how you finish it. And if you feel something and you don't finish it, then they don't know that you felt it at all, or that it was real, or that it mattered at all. And so Jesus was teaching them, he had taught them that love wasn't just something that you feel. Love was something that would require that you go do something about. It would affect your response to them, your actions to them, the way you treated someone else. And it's in this response that there is this proof of where you learned love from, where you got it from. There's a story that Luke records. And I like this one. I want to take you to this one. If you have an outline with you, it's on the back side of your outline. And it's not the first time that Jesus encountered someone with leprosy. But it's the second story that Luke records about this. There's another one where Jesus encountered a person with leprosy and he touched them. In this case, he doesn't touch this person with leprosy. And we'll talk about that a little bit in a minute. This is what it says in Luke chapter number 17, beginning with verse 11. It says, "As Jesus continued on toward Jerusalem, he reached the border between Galilee and Samaria. As he entered a village there, 10 lepers stood at a distance, crying, 'Jesus, Master, have mercy on us.'" Now, most of us know what leprosy is, and most of the time it's because of the Bible, but leprosy is a disease that is actually still around. It's just not talked about as much because leprosy is now curable. People actually are cured of leprosy. It's a pretty lengthy process because they figured out that leprosy was caused by a bacteria, and in order to conquer the bacteria, you're given a combination of a lot of antibiotics over a long period of time, and eventually they're able to drive the bacteria out of your body, and you're cured of it. In fact, years and years ago, there was a man who came to the church, and I got to know him, and one of the things he told me in private that he never told anyone else, and he said, I can't tell anybody else, is he says, I used to have leprosy. And the reason he says I can't tell anybody is because even though I'm cured of it, I don't have it anymore. It's been a long time. If I told them that, you know what they would do? In fact, they might do this, right? You ever feel kind of like that when you walk into a store and someone puts on their mask? You say, whoa, 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 I'm okay, and you know, right? It was in one sense their communicable disease that everyone feared, and that everyone socially distanced themselves from people for, and they wanted to have nothing to do with a person who had Hansen's disease, what the CDC calls it now, leprosy, Hansen's disease, because they believed that it was highly contagious. They believed that if you touched someone, got around anyone, if you were close to anyone, that you could catch what they had, and they didn't like the disease. If you know what leprosy is, leprosy, when the virus, it goes and it usually forms discolorations on the skin, patches on the skin. But the most devastating thing about leprosy is it affects the nerves on the skin, and you lose feeling in your body, which is why you see pictures of people who are lepers and they have wounds and cuts. A lot of times that's because they don't feel anymore in those places, and so they injure themselves and they don't even realize that they have injured themselves. It's a constant problem for them. It's sort of like, you know, when you go to the dentist and you get a shot of Novocaine, and the dentist warns you, and be careful, don't bite your tongue, or don't bite your, because you can chew it up and have no idea that's what you're doing, because you don't feel anything anymore. And that's what a leper faced. But socially, what a leper faced was this. No one wanted anything to do with them. They were completely distanced from people. They were considered in the Jewish law and among the those at the temple and the religious leaders, they were considered unclean, so they were not allowed to come and participate in anything as far as their relationship with God and going to the temple. The community around them ostracized them and kept them in little groups or by themselves. Most of them had to wear something, maybe bells or something, where they could come and they can say, a leper is approaching, unclean, so that you would know, I want to get out of the way quick and I want to make sure that I'm distanced from them because I don't want what they have, right? It would make sense. You and I would understand that. It's nothing new. That makes perfect sense. And so in this case, as Jesus is traveling between Galilee and Samaria, so it's up north of Jerusalem, and as he's going, he encounters, as he's traveling, there's a group of 10 lepers, not just one, but 10 lepers, because they would usually travel together, and they are crying out to Jesus. I think it's interesting, because when they cry to Jesus, they call him, Master, have mercy on us. And here's what they're acknowledging. We need you to do something for us that no one else can do for us. We need you to do something for us that we cannot do for ourselves, because our lives are separated. Our lives are, we're pushed aside. We don't matter and we don't count as far as anyone else is concerned, and there is no hope for us that this will ever change. However, they had heard that there was hope in this man named Jesus. In fact, they may have even seen Jesus do miraculous things before, but certainly they had heard of the miracles that Jesus had performed for other people. And they thought, here's a chance. Here is someone that could change everything, and our lives could be totally different. But it would require one thing, right? It would require that Jesus cared for them. It would require that Jesus have mercy upon them. Why would you have mercy upon someone you don't care about or something you don't care about? You wouldn't. But they're crying out to him in hopes, because they'd heard before, that Jesus is someone who cared. That's why Jesus was so different in his culture, is because people understood just how much Jesus cared about people, their struggles, their problems. And Jesus had the ability to change those things. So they cry out to Jesus, have mercy on us, from a distance. And if you look in the next paragraph, it says, Jesus, he looked at them and he said, this is interesting. He says, go show yourself to the priest. And so they decided to go show themselves to the priest. Now, why would Jesus tell them to go show themselves to the priest? Because to go show themselves to the priest meant to go to Jerusalem, which Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem also. But he's saying, you go ahead and go to Jerusalem, you show yourself. Why would he say that? Well, in their culture, if you had a disease or you had something like this and you were healed of it, you were cured of it, you still had, I guess it's, the priests were sort of like the CDC in our day. You had to go to the priest and you had to present yourself so the priest could examine you. And the priest, in examining you, would say, yeah, this person no longer has leprosy. They no longer have this disease. And they sort of give you the bill of good health so that you can go back into society. You could go back to your family. You could participate once again in the temple in worship and be a part of the culture once again. So Jesus is doing something probably seems strange to them. Okay, go show yourself to the priest. And you know what it says? As they were going on their way, you can read it in there. As they were going on their way, guess what? They were, say it with me, they were cleansed of their leprosy. They were healed. It went away. Now, we don't know exactly the details. We don't know how far they were at this point. Maybe they were hours away. Maybe it was something that they had to spend the night, overnight somewhere. And we don't know exactly when the 10, as they're traveling, who knows? Maybe they're just walking and all of a sudden they realize it's changed or it has gone away. Maybe in spending the night, they woke up the next morning and realized it's not the same anymore. Jesus doesn't touch them. Jesus doesn't do anything from them except from a distance. He says, go. And what they're showing when they go is they have no other hope. They're counting on this. They're trusting in this because they have nothing else to trust in or count on. They have taken the chance to cry out to him from a distance, and they're going to do what he says. You know why? Because they have nothing else to hope in. What other hope do we have? Except that maybe something would be different. But as they're going, they are cleansed. And then, this is where the story really gets good, and I think this is where the story, Jesus is certainly talking about a completing or finishing the love that he showed for them. It says in verse 15, one of them, when he saw that he was healed, he came back to Jesus shouting, praise God. Now, I can't imagine that the others weren't shouting also praises to God and looking at their lives, but he says only one of them comes back to Jesus. He fell to the ground at Jesus' feet, catch this, thanking him for what he had done. This man was a Samaritan. So he was a man who lived amongst a people who felt outcast from the Jews. They didn't get along with the Jews at all. So he already understood this in double time in his life. And Jesus, it says, he asked this in verse 17. He says, didn't I heal 10 men? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give thanks to God except this foreigner? And Jesus said to the man, stand up and go. Your what? Your faith has healed you. Wow. Jesus is saying, complete the act. Didn't I heal 10 men? Aren't there 10 out there somewhere, or at least 9 others, who are also healed of this? And yet only one comes back to say thank you, to show appreciation, to express the gratitude for what he has done for them that no one else could do. Now, you and I would understand. We say, well, maybe they just got caught up and they thought, wow, you know, now I'm going to go back and see my family or my friends. Maybe I'm going to return to my job that they wouldn't let me go back to. And they're just absolutely excited to go back to those things. But at some point, don't you think at some point they thought, maybe I should have, right? Maybe it would have been a good idea the one who changed everything, the one who actually loved me, and the one who healed me. Maybe it would have been a good idea to go back and express and to say, you know, but just like us, so many times we get caught up in the things that we're doing and the excitement of how our lives are and what we like about life, that we forget to go back to the person who meant so much, who mattered so much, who did so much for us. And we forget to go back to that person and say thank you. And let me tell you, it not only matters to you to go back and do that, it matters incredibly to the other person. It mattered to Jesus. So much so that Jesus says, so where are the other nine? I mean, he didn't blow that off. He didn't just say, hey, you know, I understand, of course, right? He was like your mom. Say, sit down and write. Yeah, because she knows, Jesus knew how important it was for an act of love, for kindness to be expressed, for an expression to come back to the person who gave the act of love, expressing gratitude and thankfulness to the other person. That completes it. That makes it one whole act. That solidifies it in our lives. In fact, that's the thing that helps love last, to continue, for it to grow. So let me ask you a question. How can you cause love to last? How can you leave or give a lasting or make a lasting expression to someone else that, yeah, will make a lasting impression to them? Because this is a part of life. And it may seem like it, well, I'm already over that. I already have that. You know, that's already finished and completed. Is it? Or is it only finished and completed when you and I express gratitude to the person who loved us and who cared for us? I know you're thinking, well, you know, I know this is Valentine's Day and this sounds like something that a preacher might come up with. And, you know, maybe you're doing this because, you know, you feel guilty about some of your own relationships. So every one of those is true, right? Just to go ahead and get you off the hook, of course. And sometimes when you work on things like this, you realize, because none of us do this naturally. This is not something that we just, you know, there's somebody that always does it. This is something that you learn. Which is why, you know, your mom pushes you to do it. Which is why someone encourages you to, which is why Jesus, you know, does this. And Luke realizes how important this story is as far as our love is concerned for other people. Because Jesus is demonstrating to us, not just talking to us about love, not just saying I love you. He's demonstrating love and teaching us how to demonstrate love. Because when you express gratitude, that's what you're doing. You're completing the circuit. You're giving back and connecting their love to you, and you're helping them understand just how much it means to you that they have loved you. So I know that it's Valentine's Day, and what I'm about to tell you, I have already done, because I'd be in real trouble if I didn't. And I know that you're thinking, yeah, but if I go and I express love or gratitude to someone, and they, you know, they're in here, or they're watching online and they realize, well, you just did that because the preacher said, you know, does it really matter? Does it really count? Because is it really an original idea? Who cares? I'll tell you this, if they're in here and they're sitting by you and you don't do it, oh yeah, now you're in bigger trouble. Let's just be honest. Let's be honest. We all understand none of these are original ideas. These are things that we learn. These are things that we recognize how important they are, and we either put them into practice or we ignore them and we suffer the consequence to our own peril and to the peril of our relationships. Yeah, it's not natural for me to write thank you notes and to express gratitude to someone else. But it is something that I need to continue to learn to do. And here's what I would encourage you to do. At some point, with the people that you love the most, that you care the most about, put it in writing. Just write it out. Say, I'm so thankful for these things that you've done. I'm so grateful that you cared for me in this way. Because in putting it in writing, they cherish it and they carry it with them because they see that you cared enough. You it was so important to you that you actually wrote it down. I've done a lot of weddings over time. And one of the things that I do with weddings when I'm meeting with a couple who wants to get married is I actually ask them to write down what they feel, how they think about the other person, to express their gratitude and their hopes and their dreams in this going forward. For some people, this is really hard. I understand. For some people, it's not. One time I did a wedding and the bride, she was a professional. So she wrote as for a living, and it came very naturally to her. So she was all excited. Oh, that's great. And she was back in a couple of days with 5 pages. I mean, it was like a small book. It can be a little overwhelming that someone, is this good at it. You don't have to be that good at it. And I'll tell you, one time in doing this, a guy came back to me, and he had a Hallmark card. And I said, that's great, doesn't count. These are someone else's words. I said, I want you to put it in your words, and she will know that these are your words, that this is the way you would say thank you, and how grateful I am for you and who you are and what you do in my life. Can I give you one little insight also into this? This is one of the reasons that a new generation and a new culture have given up on marriage. Because what they see is, in marriage, you love somebody, you care for somebody in marriage, and then all of a sudden when you get married and they have attached a negative to the commitment and the marriage itself as if the commitment caused this. Yeah, it's completed, and that means they quit showing gratitude or thankfulness because they see it as it's done. I've already kind of conquered it, and this is especially for men. I'm saying this, that it's over, and I'm moving on to the next thing. And so a new generation says, so in that case, if we never complete it, if we never get married, then maybe it will stay in the stage of expressing, and I'm so grateful, because let's face it, when we are falling in love and we find somebody that we love and we want to spend the rest of our lives with them, we are much more attuned to trying to express ourselves than we are afterwards. Now, I'll go ahead and tell you, it's a mistake, but I understand why a new generation will use this sometime to say, if I get married, then all of that will stop, because statistically, it's not true. And statistically, there are plenty of people who decide to forego marriage. Let's just move in together. Let's just act like we're married without saying we're married, without the label and without signing the deed and all that. And then it will not sour, and it's not true. This is just a tendency of human beings to take things for granted and to forget and to stop expressing. In fact, it actually does the opposite, because you're still moving toward sealing the deal, expressing gratitude, which you need to do, and then you need to do it again, and you need to do it again, and you need to do it again, because expressions of love and someone caring for you continues. And so, yeah, you have to come back again and say, thank you, I'm so grateful, just look at what you did for me. Absolutely, over and over and over again. It's how love grows. It's what causes love to last in a relationship. So, yep, it's weather's cold, right? It's going to freeze up. You can only watch so much television. Yep, you get bored with it. Sit down. Write a letter. Write thank you to the person that means the most to you. Maybe the people that mean the most to you. It's documented. It's there forever. It's something that they will cherish and they will keep with them and hold on to because those expressions of love are now expressed back to them in a way that you know it's going to last. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you don't just talk about love and you don't just say that you feel love toward us, but for you, love was something that demanded that you do something about. And you did when you sent your son Jesus into the world. And I'm so thankful that Jesus didn't just walk around with people and talk about love, but he demonstrated it, and he tried to show them how important it was, not just to feel something, but to decide whether they could put actions behind those feelings. And then when someone else loved and cared them, they could express gratitude to the person who did. Father, we thank you that your idea of love is not that it's a temporary thing or something that fails or goes away, but for you, love is something that lasts forever. It's the thing that matters more than anything else, and it's the thing that causes us to recognize just how much other people matter, especially those people who are so close to us. So, Father, help us to understand how important it is for us to express our gratitude and how much that makes love last. In Jesus' name.